You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. We're kicking off a week-long Wisconsin Life series on food today in celebration of Thanksgiving. In our first installment, we're talking about Native food traditions. For the Oneida Nation, corn isn't just food, it's culture.
The Oneida grew white corn for centuries in New York and replanted it along with their culture in Wisconsin in the 1820s. And every fall, the Oneida harvest their traditional white flint corn for sustenance and to remember that tradition.
Vicki Cornelius and Kyle Wisneski work with the Oneida Community Integrated Food Systems Project. They share their story in this installment of Wisconsin Life.
My name is Vicki Cornelius, and I'm the Canary Food Processing Supervisor. My ancestors moved here in 1822, and they brought white corn with them from the state of New York. We were part of the Iroquois Confederacy, our Five Nations. Historically, it goes all the way back to our creation story when Sky Woman fell, and she had a daughter. And then when the grandmother passed away, they say the corn grew from her breast, that's why it's milky, and the squash and the beans grew from her body. And those are our main foods to sustain our people, what we call the three sisters, Asanade Gundahundel. We connect the women to the three sisters to do this dance that we call Old Woman's Dance. We have social dances that you do in public. Well, the Old Woman Dance is one of the ones we don't do out in public. It's only done during the ceremonies. Because they say women, we have the breast milk to feed our children, while the corn at its milky stage is also what we call kind of the milk of the corn. And we have a ceremony called Green Corn Ceremony. And then we have our harvest ceremony. And then in the winter time, we have our midwinter ceremony. So we have many ceremonies. All our ceremonies are about being grateful for everything we have and reminding us of that connection to creation and to the earth.
Yeah, we had like to twist the corn around and then pull it and then stomp on the stem where it was on.
Sometimes
the thing off the corn, it was hard because it got stuck on the stem.
I had to like twist it and pull it, and sometimes I had like step on the corn husk.
Are we on the radio or something?
My name's Kyle Wisneski, greenhouse technician. This is a final stage before we go and dry the corn. We husk it down with the three strongest husk, called lopping it off. We lop off that big, long cob piece there. Excuse my colleagues here, but what we do is we get 65 cobs, braid it onto one braid there, and then we bring it into our corn shed where we hang it over winter. That's right down here. We usually do about 250 braids a year, and they have to hang in there for 3 to 4 months before it is processed into human food.
It's a product that you can store for years and years. I've heard of a guy storing and hanging white corn braids for up to 7 years and then planting it and seeing if it still grew, and it did. I've heard of nations in the Iroquois having up to 1 million bushels of corn in storage at one time historically. So it's our new healthy fast food or Oneida food, I call it.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. This episode was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. For more information, visit wisconsinlife.org.
Jeff Matoxin joins us now to share more about other Native food traditions. He's the director of the Junhequa program for the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin. Jeff, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity and chance to share some of the stories and what our program strives for.
Well, let's start with that, the Junhequa program for the Oneida Nation. What do you do there?
Our program is trying to be an educational model on sustainability for the community members. We look at our agricultural component as well as the cannery component, a place where our community members can come learn about the gardening process, the white corn that we have here that's been talked about during our annual harvest and husking bee. We also have grass-fed beef, poultry with our chicken layers, as well as the broilers that we process on site. And then those particular garden products that can be processed, our community cannery is open to the public. An appointment is required, and they can contact them, and they'll work them through the steps of how to can their salsa or green beans, pickles, their applesauce, a variety of products.
All right. So this sounds like this isn't just sitting in a classroom here. This is actually some hands-on work, right?
Yes, that's correct. A big part of what our program is striving for is how can we help the people see that they have a choice when it comes to their meals, so that whether they want to get into a garden or they want to get into a very small container gardening, as well as processing. Say they aren't able to garden, but they do pick their own apples, and they get a bushel, and they want to process that into apple pie filling or apple sauce. The cannery strives, and Vicky's our supervisor. She was just talking about the white corn. Mm-hmm. She actually will have them come in, and she'll show them how to use the equipment. So it isn't a place really where someone would just kind of stop in and look. Both agriculture and cannery, we work very hard to show them these steps, share with them our successes as well as our challenges, and how can we help you make those decisions and better choices for your meals.
Let's get into that white corn that we just heard about. What once you're done processing it there, what do people do with it?
A lot of times, once we have it off the field, we're looking to get it to a drier stage. Our particular white corn, it has always had a high moisture content, so you do have to be aware of the proper drying techniques. So what we look for is probably like many other grains, but from a traditional practice, we want to dry it down in air circulation. We're really not looking for light. You can use heat to dry it down, but for ourselves at this point, we're not doing it. We have a fan system, a drying system. And once it's down to at least, we're trying to target 12%, it's going to store at a fantastic level and last for a very long time. The best thing for us to store it at is in a freezer once it's down, because we have to shell it, winnow it, and then you have the ability. Vicky touched a little on how someone was able to save their braids and the corn under proper storage. You can make the soup out of it, the traditional cornbread. That's a traditional meal for us that's coming up on Thanksgiving. And then you can get the flour if you want to make the bread yourself. So there's a variety of products that you can make with the white corn.
And I understand you're working to be a kind of a seed saver for some of the traditional foods. What are you doing?
Things that we've been working on is how to find out what are some of the traditional, let's say, beans in the Three Sisters garden with the corn, beans, and squash. What are the beans that are traditionally we would plant? What are the squashes or pumpkins? And we try and work with some of the other families and individuals in the area. And it's been a work in progress for a very long time to do it properly. We do not take the approach of we're going to have this vastly large agricultural area. We look at it as you have a lot of families and individuals planting their seed, sharing that seed. How do we take care of it and preserve it best so that we can pass that knowledge on and that those particular foods are going to be around?
So what else are you doing to educate people in the community to encourage them to grow their own food and have a sustainable home food production system?
At this point, what we do have is workshops basically available upon request. We've gone through some growing stages and pains that we used to have standard workshops, but trying to find out ones that people are going to attend and you have an attendance that's worth having it. So we actually do quite a lot of workshops for people that either come to the site. We offer tours and presentations. That's just part of the program services that we do have. And what we look at is how can we educate them, whether it's through an article in our tribal newspaper, which is called the Gully Wee Sox, whether it's like these opportunities now, talking with them about our program. So we've been able to make contacts with a lot of education areas from grade schools to universities and a lot of entities, and just talking about what our program is working on. So we're constantly looking at what's the best way we can put our information forward and how do we make sure that it's preserved and passed on.
And how many people come through there, through the agriculture part, through the cannery, seeking this kind of help?
Oh, that's a really tough number to place on. Obviously, during the harvest time, say, depending on what the produce is, it can start as early as June if they have products that they want to process at the cannery and then run until now, whether it's certain items that they've harvested and can store well in cold storage. Sometimes individuals pick up, like the white corn stores well. They've come in and they process through our cannery. The agricultural site, I'm not really talking as if it's nonstop busy in any area, but it's well enough that we generally ask for appointments so that our staff as well on all the sides are prepared to provide that tour or give that presentation so that no one really feels overwhelmed, and also we provide something that's going to benefit everyone. Those have been going rather well for us year after year, and as I mentioned, we're constantly looking at ourselves, how can we improve? You know, there's no perfect system. It's learning as and adapt as we go along, but making sure we don't lose our traditions, our culture in this process.
And I guess a big question is why? Why is it important to keep these food traditions alive?
One of the things that I think everyone always realizes is when they have an understanding of their particular culture and their traditions is, how do we pass that on? How do we ensure that our children and the other generations have that knowledge? It's been there. And Vicki had touched on it in our own creation story for the Oneida Tribe. It does talk about the white corn. It does recognize the importance of seeing how do you work with the environment? How do you work with your food? There's some excellent discussion points out there and research on the food as medicine. And we've seen very well how can we maintain our traditions and deal with some of the health issues that I think all people are addressing, but especially with tribal members, that when they have to deal with diabetes, that there is food out there. There is a lot of things that come from our natural environment that can help us in these areas, whether it's with stress, high blood pressure, so many things that we don't get so caught up in the today's world and technology that we lose that knowledge that has helped us in the past and helped us get stronger and survive.
And as younger people come through, are you optimistic? Do you see them picking this up and running with it after they go through the trainings there?
It's tough. It does both. At times, realistically, you talk with the students and you work with them, as I mentioned, maybe from the grade school, who are probably the best workers I've ever seen. The energy level's way beyond any of the adults and in the high school level. But just making that connection, it does feel good that you talk with the students, or maybe they return. They've talked about the harvest and husking bee. A big part of that during the October for our white corn is education days, and it is nice to see some of the grade school levels that return every year or may have been gone for a year, and they remember what they were doing with the white corn and how they picked it, and they share those stories with their parents and teachers. So I'd rather be optimistic, and I am optimistic that we'll continue to strive to make an impact on them as well as their families.
All right.
Touching base with their elders as well is how do we bring back those stories that they have and that knowledge so we can all learn.
All right, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
That's Jeff Metoxin, director of the Junhequa program for the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin.